Oh, hi, audience listeners, wherever you may be. It's Rack Addicts After Hours time once more from our original studio location, ancestral home. It is the pub. We have a new friend for you. You'll hear him soon. But welcome to episode 135. Peter's here. My name is Ben. Ollie, thank you for joining us. Thank you so much.
You're most welcome, Ben. You're most welcome.
Delicious stuff. We do begin our podcast, as always, with a weekly update. Pete, what have you been doing that may or may not be connected to music and technology and things our listeners might enjoy?
I have been attempting not to get too hot, as everyone else has been. It seems that there's a, I wouldn't say necessarily a worldwide heat wave, but it's certainly Europe, UK and America, I hear, as well. So we all seem to be in this kind of immense hot weather.
Yes.
The opposite of a snow globe.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. But possibly some of our Australian listeners won't be so impressed by it.
No.
Because it's the sort of thing that they have to endure all the time.
Indeed. Have you been firing up your air conditioner?
Yeah. In fact, my air conditioner has been purloined by my son, who
deinstalled it
from my studio and carted it off to his bedroom.
Rude.
I think he did it to impress his girlfriend. So look, I've got air in the bedroom. But yeah, and then he proceeded to run it quite late at night, and because it's a freestanding unit, the whole top floor of the house was resonating. It was just there was this sort of low frequency hum, and I'm laying there thinking I can't possibly go to sleep with that racket going on. So I insisted that he switched it off. But no, I've just been noodling in the studio as much as I can.
Ooh, nice.
Again, obviously without the air conditioner, I can't spend extended periods in there because it just gets too hot. And as anyone who lives in the UK knows, that our housing stock isn't designed for heat, it's designed for cold. So as soon as it gets warm, as it has been over the last couple of weeks, it gets highly unpleasant.
Definitely. Have you been chewing on that Hydrosynth Deluxe?
Yes, to a degree. I've been somewhat lax. I should really be recording. I've got a particular track that I'm getting ready to record on it. But the trouble is the mind has slipped over to the UDO, which is now fully ordered and in place for the next couple of weeks. So
wonderful.
I've gone all UDO-y.
Have you looked up the new changes in the latest firmware with delay freeze, polyphonic LFO action, some cool stuff?
I am very bad at doing any firmware updates on any of my equipment. I do the odd one, but generally I'm particularly lax. So I would imagine half the synths in my studio have to be upgraded, and I haven't at this time. But is that on the UDO we're talking?
Indeed, yes.
No, I wasn't even aware of that.
It's got some pretty cool stuff. Maybe check out the release.
Oh, I will do that.
Any more musical antics?
No, really. I've just been laying low because of the heat.
Yeah. Same here. I have chewed on a bit of Zelda Breath of the Wild, only 6 years late. Has it really been that long? Oh, man. Yes. It's one of those ones I've started many times, but have only just chewed on. There's the four, in fact, main bosses that you kind of have to defeat. I'm now three.
I see.
Three into the game. Sleep Token has been on my mind. I'll talk about them later. And Modcaf had a bit of a special something on... when was it? End of July, in fact. We had a bit of a summer sessions festival type styly in a pub in Farnham, and I have put together the highlights video. And if you've seen any of the Modcaf videos on the YouTube channel, have you seen any of those, Pete?
I saw the one that I was in.
Saw the one that you were in. Well, Ian is the guy who used to make those, and he's been a busy man, so he hasn't done them for a good while. But they had a certain chaotic humour to them, which I had to attempt to channel while I was making it, and I hope I've done him justice, but that will be out soon. I just need a list of everybody's links to all their performances and such.
What was the venue like?
It was just, it was a pub. We were pre-warned that they have a bit of a dispute with their neighbour over noise, so we were cautious, but it did get very loud and nobody seemed to care, so it obviously wasn't a problem. The PA was actually from Ian's collection. We wanted to use, I don't know that it's a house PA, but it is the Bose F1, the one that has tops and subs.
Yeah,
that's
the F1.
Yeah, we were hoping for that for proper low-end destruction, but unfortunately Ant was disappointed by the low-end performance for his kind of drum and bass style set. We couldn't really hear the bass line, unfortunately.
That's the problem that you get with PAs if you haven't really worked with it.
Yeah, totally. Even big old 15-inch PA speakers can't really handle that kind of stuff. Oh, well. That's been fun. That's all I've been doing, really. But Ollie, you've got 3 years or 2.5 years or something of catching up with our audience to do in terms of what you've been doing in your musical life. But more recently, what kind of musical things have you been doing?
Wow. I think just like a lot of people, I was in an act that bit the dust in the lockdown.
Shame.
So it's been fairly reflective. I found myself in a situation where I found myself isolated from all of my gear at home and away from the shop and away from the environment that I work in. And it was really refreshing. And I ended up doing some acoustic bits in a land down under, which was kind of refreshing. It's good to completely turn on its head every once in a while you're doing the music.
Was that kind of visiting basically the pub scene down there, doing acoustic stuff?
Or just working
on your acoustic bits?
I wouldn't call them pubs down there. I call them bars because everyone seems like happy down there. just doing some acoustic stuff and getting to what the whole reason I'm doing music, which was good. It was very refreshing, very affirming. And then I came back, returned to the shop, and it's all gone away. No. it's good. It's brought a good amount of minimalism, and just getting the things you need to go by is an important palate cleanser.
Yeah, well, they always say if a song can't just be played on an acoustic guitar with voice, like, it's not a good song. Do you agree?
No. I wouldn't just tend to agree with that just because of, there are some amazing bass lines and inferred melodies in so many wonderful tunes that I wouldn't have thought possible on an acoustic guitar, certainly not with someone with my appalling skills. And the gist of those inferred things, I tend to find you need at least two hands to key those in. But I'm not particularly good with two hands. I usually only use the one. That was nice and clear. And getting into vocal stuff as well.
Vocals. You said you bought an Orpheus, vaguely. Or was it an Orpheus?
It was a Corona.
A Corona. Yes, of course.
They're fantastically well-named for 2019 or 2020 release. Yeah, Sontronics mic, which was obviously modelled off their Halo, which was a guitar mic. And everyone kept using it for vocals because it looked so cool.
But yeah, they go, no, what are you doing?
Yeah, being a guitar mic, obviously, it just shelves off all the low ends and all the lovely gravel that people want from beautiful depth.
Need those soulful voices.
Sean Connery would not be seen dead with a Sontronics Halo. It just wouldn't capture the depth.
Is that kind of recording projects that you've been doing with your vocals?
No, I've been trying to gather some bits together to go for that, and I've been mildly successful. And I'm nice to sit on those and wait for those seeds to flourish and germinate. So we'll see where we are. And, the classic, ask me in 9 months' time when it's grown up a bit and I've got a larger belly.
Nice. Well, can we ask about the band that unfortunately bit the biscuit? Who are they? Can we still find you online? Do you want us to find them online?
Yeah, it was a band called Lawlia. The singer was really talented lady called Lauren of Britain's Got Talent fame, although obviously she moved on quite a lot from that. And the music was good. Yeah, it's all online as Lawlia. I think it's Laulia. There's some good tunes on Spotify that we did together for the time we had together, which was good.
Awesome. We must move, of course, into our next segment. The news! We do have some news, and the first news is bad news. Pete, have you heard about WMD?
No, have they?
The biscuit, the bucket, it's happening. Let me read you a little section from their little press
release.
They've kicked
the biscuit and eaten the bucket.
Precisely. What an excellent metaphor we've got there. With the risk of going further in debt with no end in sight, we have concluded that the only option is to wind down our production facility with the plan to close by the end of 2022. We wish that we could keep things going, that we could see another path, but the stress alone has been harmful to our mental health, and our lack of incoming cash is only making it worse. They do have three new products that they're launching, producing in limited numbers, and then they're done at the end of this year.
Seems to be a thing at the moment. There's lots of people biting the big one.
Exactly. It's another parts shortage, stress type thing. And what I wanted to ask you, Ollie, have any guitar-related companies died? Because I wouldn't have been paying attention if they had. Have you noticed anything? Obviously, it would probably be the boutique one people type shows.
Yeah, there's a fair amount of amalgamation at the moment.
Or people like buying each other out?
Well, I think it's more partnerships to keep people going. Now, I don't know the financial state of the smaller pedal builders, for instance, but a good example would probably be MXR working with Paul Cochran on the Timmy pedal. Mm. So I think some of the bigger companies are perhaps helping with some mass production runs, obviously. Mm. I'm assuming there's going to be some payment to it. Yeah, trying to keep the pedal builders going. The pedal builders have done, they've done all right on the whole,
Not too bad.
Yeah, pedal builder things and people playing at home. I think at the moment we're just in a little point in the market of saturation where everyone's been sat at home with all the lovely stuff they bought with their furlough money because they didn't go travelling with it. Generally speaking, it's not been too bad or seemed too bad, but I've not had my fingers in all of the smaller builders' pies. I tend to keep my fingers in the big pies because, you know, I've got big fingers. That's why I can't play acoustic guitar.
I can see us seeing a tidal wave of these boutique manufacturers failing all over the place.
Yeah, no doubt.
I had a customer in the store last week who had been recently at Moog and was saying they're really in trouble at the moment.
Ooh, interesting.
So according to him, and I haven't got this verified, they're struggling to afford to buy components to build synths. And so they are working half-time or working part-time.
Interesting, yeah.
Apparently, but I don't know how factual that is, but he seemed pretty authoritative in what he's saying. So someone like Moog is suffering, a company that's been established for over 50 years. Mm. Some of these small little boutique manufacturers
suffering.
Yeah, I mean, WMD is a very established modular manufacturer.
Absolutely.
So who knows? Obviously, there are problems with their business model.
Yeah, it could potentially be. Or, I mean, even if you had a rock-solid one, everybody's going to be suffering, aren't they?
Yeah, so we've already seen retailers like London Modular go down.
Yep.
And now it's the actual manufacturers.
Ooh, yeah. Future Retro? There's a French synthesizer brand that died. There's definitely been three that we've mentioned. I have forgotten them all. One interesting thing about that I mentioned, I think, a couple of episodes before, there's a small company that do a really niche kind of vintage-inspired drum machine of some kind. But the guy posted on Instagram with a shipment of chips that he'd ordered like over 2 years ago, like only just arrived, and, you know, lets him finish that whole batch that he'd been sitting on. So WMD's last hurrah, we have Orion, which is limited run of 600, a phaser, we have Subway, 8-input, 1-output scanning crossfader, and Legion, which is analog oscillator with loads of different waveform outputs. Ooh, 12 in fact. PWM. Actually, no, those aren't outputs. We have outputs swarm, sub, sine, tri, saw, and pulse, as well as a bunch of different modes. But we like WMD. They make good stuff.
Yeah, I might have to make an investment, buy something. At least I've got I always fancy this. They make the Geiger counter, don't they?
I don't know.
I'm sure that was a WMD module.
Yes, they do. What is it?
They'd have sold loads of those during the Chernobyl disaster.
Oh, a wavetable oscillator or something.
No, it's a distortion.
Well, it's got a wavetable thing on it.
Is it?
Or am I blind? Hundreds of entirely new face-melting sounds. Yeah, it's a preamp.
Yeah.
Where did I get a wave folder from?
Face-melting sounds.
Oh, wavetable.
The sounds of Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah, exactly. Mace felting. Ah, yes. So, remember that synth with the spinny?
The motors.
No, the other one with the spinny knobs.
Yes.
Yeah, so, Ollie, there was a cool synth that was teased, and we've slowly been drip-fed news from it. You know, flying faders on, like, a digital mixing desk? This had the ones, you know, the digital ones that, like, move on their own, like,
those boys.
Melbourne Instruments have the Nina, but that has motorized knobs on a synth, which is pretty cool. We at last have pricing. So, Pete, let me give you the specs again, just to refresh your money so you can give it a guess. Obviously, it's got the motorized knobs and very clickety-clackety looking buttons. 12-voice analog polysynth, variable shape oscillators, transistor ladder filter with a distortion, digital wavetable oscillator with sampling as well, stereo panning effects, 4-quadrant multipliers if you wanted those, whatever they are, digital effects. It's a module. It's boutique. Kickstarter launching on 4 days ago. Place your bets. We've got the price in US dollars.
I'm thinking it's between 3,400 and 3,700.
Cool. I'm going to go for 3,701.
Ah, Pete was the closest, unfortunately.
Ah.
3,500 US dollars. Let me see if I can check on that Kickstarter.
I keep getting emails from them saying, would you like to buy one of these?
Oh, you're already there. Right.
Well, I'm thinking to myself, no, I don't want to buy one of those.
But you do look like $3,500, Pete.
Thank you.
There's a lot of extra dosh that goes with that beard of yours.
Oh, man, Winter Pete, yeah.
Winter Pete.
Ooh, $3,000 now, apparently. Interesting.
They seem to be all over the place with the
now
price.
Now discounted early bird price. Yes, include rack ears. Ooh, $20 for the rack ears. It's going to break the bank, that.
You've got to wonder how a company like that's going to survive in this very febrile climate we're in at the moment.
Difficult times. Okay, who else we got? Ah, yes, Busy Circuits, ALM. We do like them. They make some cool stuff. But they have another module with clickety-clackety buttons for ultimate satisfaction. This is the ASQ1 SH101 style sequencer. And you have an SH101. Do you remember using the sequencer?
Vaguely, I haven't.
Was it satisfying?
Well, I haven't used the SH101 properly for 35 years, I want to say. It doesn't function as it should do.
Yeah, it's a little bit poorly.
And the particular chip that I need to replace is the one that controls the interface between the sound engine and the keyboard and the sequencer.
Ah, so an important one. Yes. Yeah. One
so
that you might
just need.
The keyboard
part is fantastic, and the brain of the thing is fantastic, but it's got no limbs to connect them up.
Something like that. Well, it kind of makes squeaky noises, but I can't control them.
So it's a mouse.
Possibly.
Problematic.
A house mouse.
House mouse. So this guy has two tracks of pitch sequencing and four trigger sequencer tracks. And, oh man, those clickety-clackety buttons will do something for me. £315. It's not too terrible for a six-track sequencer.
Yeah, it's okay.
It doesn't have any kind of screen or anything, so it'll all be LEDs through the buttons in terms of your readout. Yeah, I guess there's one more. So, you know the company that made the Metropolis-style sequencery thing that you had?
The M183.
Yeah, that one. M185.
Five,
oh, you were so close.
Yeah.
But they've got a, I believe, polyphonic module coming called the Vectorwave 16 oscillator FM, oscillators, VCA, envelope, LFOs, and all sorts. I believe there's a MIDI input, so you can do all that kind of fun stuff. But there it is. That's okay. A thing in development. There's stuff on Instagram if you want to go find it. RYK Modular. It is still prototypey. And there was one in the hands of Loopop when he demoed the Eventide Misha sequencer, if you want to listen to it there. Cool stuff. Not quite out yet. Keep an eye on it if you want some polyphony in your rack. Okay, we're going to move away from Synthy Boys. Pete, I found a shop that I really want to visit in London because it seems to only sell the types of satisfying, handcrafted, artisanal things that we seem to appreciate. This is Labour and Weight, somewhere in East London. Let me get an example of the kind of stuff.
Is that weight as in take your time, or is that weight as in I've got too much of it and my doctor recommends
you get some exercise in you?
Stop eating red
no,
meat.
No, it is indeed in terms of the take your time. Where there was a kind of a tool box type situation that I thought you'd really appreciate, Pete. Is it in Household? Yeah, we go. So they have a round leather tool bag, which is kind of cool, but they also do super vintage-looking...
I do like a leather tool bag.
Yeah. Cantilever toolboxes. Look at that. Look at that.
Oh.
So they source all this kind of stuff from, you know, the only manufacturer left in England that's still plugging away making these kind of things. And a Japanese wood plane. Ooh.
So it's those artifacts that you just want to fondle.
Exactly. You want to go in there and fondle all of their Japanese tool carrier bags in olive, etc.
It doesn't look cheap.
No. There are some reasonably priced things, but some of the stuff is quite pricey. Labour and Weight. Go browse their website. It's really fun. Ollie, I have a question for you.
Ben, hopefully I've got an answer for you.
Ooh. In the world of guitars and other musical things that we don't quite understand, even though I am a guitar player... What is exciting you these days?
What is exciting me?
Even if it's not a fresh release, if it's something old and awesome, we like old things.
What's exciting me is it's a complete contrast to the small builders we've been championing recently. It's actually it is from Fender, and it's the amount of variety they now offer on their lower rung, the Squire stuff.
Yeah,
lots of designs from the past, lots of sort of different things, which will allow loads of people with a lower budget to access a guitar that doesn't look like their dad's. And, you know, they're nicely made, as you'd expect from Fender at a certain price point. I think that it's, while we're not exactly feeling it now, I think it's going to really open up a lot of corridors to different things. A lot of corridors to bands looking.
Slightly more innovative products, or are you talking in terms of the people who are using
them? Mostly design. You know, a lot of this stuff with guitars is snake oil and hubris, because let's be honest, it's they are planks of wood with magnets in them.
Yep.
And nickel strings on them. It's not exactly high tech. You know, the big thing with these things you hold in your hand, is that they're a certain shape and you kind of want them. There's something about them that you just want. It's like old cars. You know, there's so many cars which are desirable that have no air conditioning, no power steering. They do about 4 miles to the gallon. They are appallingly polluting but smell fantastic, and for some reason there's a bit of you that wants it more than a really comfortable, sensible Ford Fiesta with lovely air conditioning and a beautiful ride and nice and quiet seats and everything like this. But
and all that feeling is wrapped up in these new Squire releases, is it?
100%, that's it. We're newish Squire releases, and they're keeping to them. They're not limited runs. Nice. Things like the Paranormal series, things like the Contemporary series.
For us idiots over here, what are they?
I beg your pardon.
I know what shape a telly is and what a Strat looks like and other such things.
That's it. So it's mostly stemmed off the failed releases. I'm afraid to say the mid-60s, things like your Mustangs and your Jaguars, and previous to that, the Jazzmaster. Obviously, those guitars became a lot less desirable because they were riddled with design flaws of the time.
One of them has like a super strange bridge that never stayed in tune, doesn't
it? That's exactly it. The Jazzmaster stemmed that bridge because it was initially designed for 13-gauge strings for jazz, you know, big, thick strings. Yeah, yeah. And then the moment people in the late 60s, early 70s started going, well, we don't need really thick strings. We don't need acoustic guitar thickness strings on these things because it's magnets. Yeah. We can get away with it. So the moment you put sensible gauge strings on these things, they just cease working. And so those guitars essentially went through the secondhand market, weren't in demand. And those were the cheap, affordable instruments of the early 80s, the late 70s, and the bands that took on the alternative mantle, the birth of punk, the birth of indie as we know it, post-punk then, they were playing these instruments. And of course, now we're in a situation where that is part of the rock and roll canon. This is stuff that people aspire for, you know, of a certain generation. You know, the Smiths are they're not a new band, unfortunately, you know, but there's so much available that's now in that affordable realm for people in the mass-produced times that we live in, using cheaper labour, overseas to produce these things. And the fact that you've got this level of, this palette of shapes and inspirations and guitars that evoke that type of playing, because different guitars just help you play differently and they take you to a different place. Those being available, more readily available, well made and at affordable price point, is I think it can only be good. Certainly for Fender and their bank balance.
Yeah, absolutely. What is your corner of the guitar world? What makes you happy? Just for your playing, what shape are you going to? What brand? What sound works? Ballpark it, because you can't get so specific when you're talking about a guitar tone. That doesn't work so well. But what's your happy place?
Happy place is just I'm a Fender sucker. If that's is that going to compute? Not
yeah,
gonna
I
compute.
Think it'll work.
Sucker will work. Yeah, yeah. And obviously, you know, the heritage that goes with that. Actually, a brand I did discover fairly recently, although I'm a little late to the party, was a brand called Revolta. They're a subsubsidiary of Novo Guitars. Well, they were of Novo Guitars.
Another name I've got.
Now
no
it's
idea at all.
Sorry, Novo, which was James Fano Designs. Yeah, really, really nice made stuff. Just a bit different, not run-of-the-mill. You know, I'm not a Les Paul guy. You know, they're very heavy and they do one thing very well, and that one thing is something I think those guitars maybe tell a story that's already been told, and I like to go down the route of shapes of the tales that we've not heard just yet, because some of the classics have, you know, we've been told these stories many times, and there's only so many times you can watch Star Wars and enjoy it like you did when you were young. So, yeah, at the moment, I've got a fairly old Mustang, which I very cherish, and I've got a Jaguar, which was a superb gift from a very good friend, which I'm entirely grateful for. And, yeah, this Revolta guitar, which is a little bit more of a... It's got more of a Josh Homme vibe to it, Queens of the Stone Age. Do some heavier stuff on it, which is quite cool. That's what's flicking my switch at the moment, Ben.
Awesome. We do like flicking switches in the world of modular, and we also like grasping knobs as well. Quite often, that's as innuendo-y as I can be bothered to be today. Of course, we must round out a podcast with a classic section that we always do, the miscellaneous multimedia recommendation, otherwise known as which YouTube channel has Pete been watching this week. Do you want to take it away?
Yes, I will grab it and run with it now.
Excellent.
This is a channel that's been around for a little while. The channel is entitled World War II, kind of says what it's about.
Yep.
So the premise is that these guys have basically done their research very well, and each episode is done in day order, and they do a week of what was happening in the Second World War right across the planet on each episode.
Gotcha.
So they'll talk about the European theatre, they'll talk about the Japanese theatre, they'll talk about whatever was going on.
Yeah, the full picture.
And it's really detailed, but done in a very interesting way. It's sort of like a pseudo-American newsreader of the time.
Oh, yeah.
And the gentleman who hosts the programme is done in, he's dressed up in 1940s kind of garb with the trilby and the suit and
that's
so
great.
Forth.
And the gout.
And, and he just goes through it in certainly in a lot more detail and gives you a lot better framework about what's happening. Because I think most people have got a kind of perception of how the Second World War went and kind of
Mine is incredibly vague.
When things kind of happened. But this really puts a very incremental detail around it.
That
and it's interesting.
Good.
And it puts a whole different perspective on what's going on. You didn't realise that this event was actually connected to this other event was happening over here that you didn't necessarily associate.
Yeah. There's a lot of students of World War II, probably students of World War II, like I said, university. Obviously, it was a horrific conflict. But it's quite linear. What people would understand, they'd understand about the Eastern Front, and they'd understand perhaps, oh, this is what happened with Stalingrad, for instance. Then they'll go to the Philippines campaign. But obviously that's cool because that's like an MRI where you've got an intersection through time.
Yeah, so like a slice of that, what's happening this week.
But all at once.
And they kind of pitch it like they're actually commentating on it like it's the weekly news.
That's the angle they do it.
So I think it's done very well. Mm. It's very professionally done. The research is impeccable, and it's a very different way of presenting it. And I don't know about you guys, but over the years, I've seen many different World War II documentaries. There was obviously the famous one that was done with Laurence Olivier narrating. Mm. That was done back in the 70s, and that was the sort of de facto, I don't know how many parts it was, 40 episodes or something ridiculous like that, The World at War. And there's obviously individual documentaries, and I'm sure we've all seen films that, I don't know, use a certain amount of artistic license. Maybe,
of course.
Thing. But this is really on the nose, really,
awesome.
And describes it. And it's that snapshot of what happened during World War II during a particular week. And then it's sequential. So the following week, they'll do the next week and so forth.
Yeah,
and they've done in excess of 3 years of this now, so far. So there's a lot of episodes to watch.
We're currently at 1942.
Something like that. I haven't really sort of done the date. I thought, well, there's no point in jumping in at some of the latest videos. I need to scroll back. So I'm 3 years
at the back. You don't want to spoil it for yourself. You don't want to know how it ends.
And there's all sorts of conflicts that I hadn't realised had actually were a thing. I mean, you don't really think about the Russia attacking various countries prior to the sort of various accesses teaming up. I certainly think about the Russians are defending themselves from the Nazi invasion and the help that the Allies were giving to the Russians and all that. But right at the beginning of the war, the Russians were being very aggressive and attacking the Finns and the Japanese and all over the place. They were doing a lot of imperial type of stuff, all obviously under a communist banner, but they were being very aggressive.
They'd never do that these days.
No, of course not. Anyway, so that is my multimedia recommendation for this week, the YouTube channel World War II.
Wonderful. I have an album for you if you like your metal progressive. This will be the band Sleep Token from the UK. They only have two albums, but I will recommend This Place Will Become Your Tomb. And if you don't have enough attention span at all, just the single song Alkaline. They are just delicious in every possible way. You've got quite a lot of ambience in there, some excellent and quite distinctive male vocals and crushing riffs with very low-tuned distorted guitars. It's perfect. This Place Will Become Your Tomb by Sleep Token. Ollie, take it away! Round us off. What's your multimedia recommendation?
Well, mine's going to start a little bit, self-intrinsic. But my New Year's resolution was to watch 52 new films this year.
Oh, yeah.
So I've been eating the films up, and quite a lot of them, it's very varied, you know, some classic action films I hadn't seen.
So new to you, not new releases?
New to me, absolutely, yeah, because I'm not that culturally educated. Yeah, things like The Godfather, the absolute classic, Blade Runner, chick flicks, like 10 Things I Hate About You, things like that. But one film genuinely has stood out, and is, I can still say, is probably my favourite of the year, which was a 2015 release. The Big Short, which was definitely check it out. So it's a sort of documentary film. Steve Carell, Ryan Gosling's in it, Brad Pitt, and it's essentially a it's a story of the few financial investors who actually shorted the American housing market in 2007. They could see that the lenders and the banks were corrupt, and that the that this housing bubble was going to burst in the USA. And I think it came out in 2015, which I think is quite telling, because everything went a bit mad in 2016. It's really, really interesting because it really delves into what was wrong with the system and essentially how things can get twisted to make people blame certain groups, certain things happening, and not really direct their anger in the correct place. And some of the predictions made at the end of the film after what had happened by about 2015 seemed to ring true. So if you have seen it, I think it's certainly worth a revisit. There's fantastic support performance in there from Steve Carell. He does so good, and it's funny because you've got to be fairly lighthearted about this stuff because it's banking and investing. But his performance in that is second to none. It's superb. That's certainly a film I can't recommend enough to people to perhaps give a bit of historical context to maybe what's happening these days, but also what was happening then and the last big recession before, obviously, the next one, which we're all very much looking forward to.
Oh, it's going
to
be a blast.
It's going to be a blast, yes.
Once more on that title.
The title is The Big Short, available on all your favourite streaming sites, I'm sure, or be old-fashioned and pay for it.
Wonderful. Listeners, thank you so much, of course, for tuning in to Rack Addict After Hours. Apologies for the temporary gap, but we all need a break sometimes. Stay safe. Farewell.